You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And tonight, we are...
Hey, Queens, what's going on? Welcome back to another episode of the Queen of Podcast. I am really excited to have you here. We are cracking on to nearly 40 episodes done. This is insane. And this week, we are heading back to do another industry episode with the orchestrator of Six the Musical. So one of the guys that helped put all the music together, Tom Curran, comes on to chat to us this week about what it's like getting in the studio and recording all these amazing songs that we know and love and getting to help put the show on stage. So let's not waste any more time. It is time to get down.
And you can't stop me, 'cause I'm the queen of the castle. Get down, you dirty rascal. Get down.
Hey, queens, and welcome back to the Queendom Podcast. This is another industry week this week, and I'm really excited about this one because I have Tom Curran, who's the orchestrator for Six, here with me. Hey, Tom, how are you going?
Good, thanks. How are you doing?
I am wonderful, and I'm really excited to get stuck into the kind of musical nitty-gritty. We touched on a bit with Katie a couple months ago now, but now we get to unpack it all again with you, and I'm really excited to get stuck in. But first, what's your lucky number?
Four.
Four. Any particular reason, or is it just like something that's always...
Well, my birthday is the 4th, and so I've always found 4 to be a... I don't know. I like the symmetry of 4, being even number and all that. But yeah, 4 is my lucky number, and has been kind of forever.
Yeah, awesome. What's your favourite animal?
A dog.
Nice and easy.
I say dog. I've got a dog, so yeah, have to be that.
Out of all instruments in the world, what's your favourite?
Oh my gosh, there's so many. I mean, I'm going to say piano just because that is my kind of first instrument.
Yeah.
It's what I grew up playing. It's what I kind of play now. So yeah, I'll say piano. Okay. And it's got lots of keys. So that's, you know.
Now, for the hard one, you have the ability to time travel. What show would you want to work on if you could time travel back to be kind of at the initial building stage of that show?
Oh my gosh. I mean, probably something like the original production of Sunday in the Park with George, something that was kind of so groundbreaking, you know. So yeah, I'd say Sunday in the Park with George the first time around.
Okay, I love that. There we go. Now, speaking of other iconic musicals that you are a part of, how did you find your way to be a part of the Six family and working on the show?
Sure. So I got a phone call from a friend of mine about actually something else, something completely different. And at the end of that conversation, he mentioned that he'd been to see this show called Six, written by two young Cambridge University students who were just about to graduate. And he was like, I think you'd be a really good fit for the project. And I was like, okay, yeah, that's, you know, I'll have a listen. I'll you know, can you send me some stuff? And so he's actually a mutual friend. He's the link between Toby and myself, okay. In the first instance. So he kind of set us up together. And I just got sent kind of the very first student production recording of the show. And I'd say from the minute I heard those nine songs in their kind of first form, I was convinced that it was something genius.
Yeah.
The writing and particularly the lyrics, I thought were, well, something I'd never heard before in musical theatre, just the wit and the construction, and how the music and lyrics meld together, I thought was just so interesting. So I was hooked from that first moment. And then I ended up meeting up with Toby and Lucy, you know, just to kind of get, you know, to get a sense of what they were wanting to do with the project and all that kind of thing. And then it kind of just went on from there. And we did these workshop performances. So I kind of came in between the original student production and the very, very first kind of tryout form. I think we did four nights in London.
Okay.
So yeah, I kind of came in the middle of that.
So in the middle of where everything kind of started changing in that.
When things started changing. Yeah. When it started to gain some traction.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Do you just want to talk about your role with the show and explain what you do from your perspective instead of me trying to do that?
So I'd say that my responsibility for this show is kind of to do with how the music sounds. The design of the music. So you have costume design, you have lighting design, you have sound design, you know, all those different disciplines are kind of design categories. And so I'd say that as an orchestrator, it's effectively the music design. It's the way it sounds. You know, it's working. It's taking the composer's ideas and expanding them to be played, you know, by a band or whatever the lineup is for the show.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, like breaking it down, Toby and Lucy kind of write what they want. You make it sound the way they want it. And then, for example, right at the start, Joe then took that and then put it on stage and actually performed it.
Yeah. So in general, the process would be the composer would write something, whether it's by, you know, writing it out by hand or singing into a voice memo, you know, the dictaphone. And then that material would then be sent to me to kind of flesh out or expand upon those ideas. In the case of Six, actually, Joe had written out all of Toby's, you know, kind of recordings of him singing and playing the songs with Lucy in the background, interjecting with the, you know, the kind of ensemble stuff. So he did a lot of that. The kind of transcription work to get it onto the page, and the fact that's what they used in their very first student production was the kind of Joe's arrangements of these songs, and that's generally how it would work in theatre. You'd have somebody as an arranger to begin with to kind of get that music on the page if the composer hasn't got the time or is not able to notate everything, you know, as they want it, and then I would collaborate with that person, whether it's Joe, the musical supervisor, and the composer, to kind of to come up with a clear vision. And to be honest, Toby and Lucy had such a clear vision for this. It was undeniably everything you hear is, you know, they have had an input in, you know, in terms of sonically why it's there. There's a reason to everything you hear in this show. There's a reason why it's there, and it could be justified along the way. And I think that is so. It's cool in the respect that you can, you know, you can stand by and be like, yes, this is here because there's a reason.
Yeah. Awesome. So with the kind of looking at the keys and the different parts, were the, like the synth sounds and all of that already kind of set in stone by the time you came on, or did you have a hand in kind of finding the right sounds for certain instruments and that type of thing?
yeah, effectively, it was when I got involved, it was effectively, I was given the freedom to start, effectively start again, start from scratch. Toby and Lucy, they made a really comprehensive list of references to popular artists and pop and, you know, pop songs and just music in general that they wanted to kind of have that sound, but on their music. So I was given a very clear roadmap from the beginning of, you know, we want, in No Way, for example, we want the drum groove in the chorus to be the same as 2 minutes and 30 seconds of this song. You know, it was like effectively trying to match up or extract elements of existing, you know, pop repertoire and impose it onto their music. And I think that's, for me, why I found this project so extraordinary, because it was like nothing I'd ever done before, trying to work out why something sounds like it, you know, like it does, and then how to get that out of that, you know, track, and then the essence of that, put it onto the music in six.
That is so cool. I love that. That just that thought of them like listening to a song and being like, cool, we want that. Yeah, can you find that? Like, that's just
there's a Google Doc somewhere of just lists and lists of like ex-wives, and then the references that they both hear for certain sections and all that kind of thing. And it was just my job to basically put that all together and be like, how about this? And then it would be a backwards and forwards, you know, we do changes and revisions, and even up until Broadway we were still tweaking. I mean, it's just a never-ending evolution of refinement and stuff.
Amazing. I love that. So part of your job is also kind of rearranging the tracks too, is that correct?
Yeah. What do you mean by that?
As in, for like, so say we get a Berlin that isn't a soprano, she's an alto or something like that. You then rearrange the tracks and vocal arrangements for each queen to suit, yeah?
So the essence of it stays the same. I think if, you know, and they're very clear from the outset in terms of casting that we're not casting carbon copies of something. It's very much, you know, the performer bringing their own spin and their own experience to the role. And so you're right, in some instances the keys of some numbers have to change because of voices and ranges and all that kind of thing. There's a few discrepancies and a few differences between different productions where certain numbers are in different keys. But I have to say it's very marginal. It's kind of like semitones or, you know, two semitones either way. It's minimal.
Yeah.
In terms of harmony redistribution, that is like the harmonies are written and Joe wrote all the vocal arrangements in the show. So they're kind of all there.
Okay.
And then it's up to the individual companies and their music director to assign if things need to be jiggled around and swapped. And, you know, for example, Arabin sings the second line rather than the top line, then those things are kind of sorted in rehearsals.
Okay.
And I wouldn't really know who's singing what on any production. It's just kind of, it's set in the rehearsal room and that's kind of, they run with that.
Yeah, that's cool. All right. That clears that up. That makes a lot more sense in my head now. Another cool thing with this show that you had a hand in was the studio recording. Because I've seen you, I've been watching the videos and the little snippets on YouTube and that type of thing, and I see you pop in and out. So what was that experience like, taking this show from the student cast, building it up to going on an extended production of the West End, and then going into a studio with it, and then having to kind of replicate everything to a point where you knew it was going to be listened to over and over again forever?
Yeah, I mean, there is a huge responsibility because, as you say, these recordings get pressed and then they are out forever and they're going to live on the internet or, you know, wherever, forever, ever and ever and ever. So there is, you're right, there is a kind of responsibility to capture the absolute intention of the music, and especially the music on a kind of a cast album style recording. What's cool as well, actually, is that the conception for this at the beginning was that the live show would be the live version of a fictional album that the band would have made, if that makes sense. So
yeah,
when you go and see Six, you're effectively seeing the live concert of their studio album, effectively. But yet the studio album at that time didn't exist. So then when we got the opportunity to do the album, it was like, okay, we're now making the album that the live stage production is effectively based on, but we did it the other way around. So we spent a lot of time refining in that period before we went in to record the studio album. We spent a lot of time kind of going back through every single bar of music and refining and trimming and just making sure it's absolutely the intention for these songs to be able to stand up on their own out of context, which is the most important thing. Which is why you'll hear people say, oh, you know, there's the, you know, when you come and see this live, some of the songs have, you know, they're given a completely different meaning.
I was literally just about to say that. Things like Amy with... I just went,
what do you want to do?
Yeah, thank you. My brain just went, no. But like, there's the emotional kind of gravitas to that show doesn't come across on the album as it does on stage. And when I heard it for the first time on stage, I was like, oh, okay, that makes so much more sense, because this is kind of the tracked version and now we're kind of amplifying it for stage. And
And also I think, you know, you're adding in choreography, you're adding in lighting, you're adding in, you know, the fact that you're seeing it live in front of you, which you obviously you never get from listening, you know, on headphones to an album. So there had to be a decision made that, you know, these songs had to stand up on their own. So for the album versions, as you know, as you've alluded to, the when you don't have all those elements combined when you're watching it, you know, it's a slightly different thing. But it's an equally valid interpretation, you know. It worked in a kind of standalone way.
I love that.
So yeah, it was fun to get a chance to make the album that the stage show was based on, you know, and add live brass section and string section, you know, and all these extra instruments on the album, and guitars and, you know, all that kind of thing that I got to have loads of fun with all that.
So in that studio setting, refining the songs back that much, how much did you guys learn about where the show was currently at and then look at what was currently on stage and adapt from that point? Because you kind of stripped it right back again once it got to a certain point. And then that would have kind of revealed a few things, I guess, as well.
Yeah, I think at that time, there weren't many productions of this show on. I think there might have only been one.
Yeah.
It might have only been the kind of London, original London version. I'm trying to get the timeline right. I think we did this album...
It's funny how like all condensed it is, because you think of the timeline, it's really only 3 years, and it's like...
I know, it's bizarre. The album was done in 2018, I think. I think that's right. So just before the first instance of the tour. You'll have to correct me if I'm wrong.
I'm Googling right now. And of course, the YouTube video is 2018, 31st of August.
Yeah, so I think that's just before, or it was released at the same time that we went to Norwich to start the first production. So the album was done in between the workshop stage and the first professionally put on its feet version of the show.
Okay.
So yeah, it kind of went in the middle of those two things. But it's funny now, because actually there's elements of the album that we've now put back into the show. So there's this kind of two-way thing of, you know, we did things on the album that we liked so much that we're like, hey, that has to go back into the show. And then so we ended up putting some of that stuff in. Just little bits and bobs, you know, all over the place.
And we've mentioned the different casts. So what's it like for you, knowing where you came into this show, now knowing the show's toured Australia, it's going on to Broadway, done UK tours, cruises. What's it like knowing that kind of it's grown from this little college production to this huge worldwide sensation?
Yeah, I mean, it's when you take a step back and you realize what's happened in the space of under, well, it's like 3 years or something. Yeah. It is extraordinary. And I don't think anyone could have predicted at the beginning that this would have happened to this show. Yeah, it is bizarre to think that it's, you know, obviously not right now at the moment, but it is kind of all over the place. And yeah, it's weird to think that, yeah, that shows it. But I think, you know, part of the reason is because it's had such a connection with the fans, and it resonates in a way that maybe other shows at the moment haven't done, or I don't know. It's a combination of things. I think it's kind of a, yeah, it's multiple. I think it's multiple things, and I think the fan base is so strong and loyal, which is amazing to see. I have to say, you know, they're just the kind of the positivity online about this show, I think, is amazing. And I'm kind of one step removed in that respect, that I'm not involved in the everyday running of it, and I'm not involved in rehearsals really. And you know, I see it in a different way, but it's still, you know, being a part of something that has grown so quickly is really exciting.
Yeah. And it's funny, like, looking back on the YouTube videos of those kind of early productions, when you could kind of see in the room that it was a buzz of like, cool, we're doing an album, like we're actually doing this now. And it was kind of like a really, it just looked like a really fun, exciting, what's next kind of feel. And I was like, that just sums up kind of this show at a creative standpoint. It always feels like, okay, what's next? Like there's never really a roof set from that perspective.
Yeah, and I think the album really helped to get the music out in the world, because I guess before that, you know, it would be a few things on YouTube or you know, word of mouth, and you know, whether you'd seen the show in an early version. But I think when the songs got released, it then opened up the fan base kind of worldwide. Effectively, suddenly that music was available all over the place, and you know, you turn up in Chicago for the first Chicago run, and I mean, I was there for the opening, and everyone already knew all the words, and it's that thing of going, you know, it's because of the album that people have been able to connect before they've even seen it, and they, you know, are going wild for it.
What was your first reaction to seeing kind of the zhuzhed up version of the show? So once you kind of came in, did the album, and then went to Norwich and onwards, what was that like, kind of seeing the show grow from that point and being in the room the first night it was kind of performed to that?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the production values went up a step from the workshop. I mean, the workshop was very minimalistic in terms of, you know, set and costume, and everything was very much kind of, we're just presenting the next version of this show from the student version, just to see the reaction. And so then to then go another step, you know, with bringing in Tim, you know, the lighting you know, every element was then amplified again. Yeah, really exciting. And actually it's funny, because even that, from then on, every time we do this, it notches up again and again. You know, yeah, the production values keep getting stronger and stronger. And yeah, it is amazing to when all those elements work together, when when I sit in the back of the theater and you know, you're effectively watching the audience watch the show, and watching all of our kind of our design aspects work in a way that, you know, we kind of all intended, it really is a satisfying thing. And yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. So with that type of thing, because obviously Tim's lighting is very in sync with the music and that type of thing. So did you have any hand with working with him to be like, cool, this is coming up, and helping him kind of set his lights, because he works very much off the beats and that type of thing, or was that kind of just all him, free reign?
Yeah, so I think the kind of aesthetic for this show is obviously it's a pop concert concept. So, you know, lighting and music in pop concerts are very synchronized. You know, it's the relationship between the two, I think, is really important. And, you know, most theatre, you know, there is an aspect of that, but nowhere near to the level of kind of trying to replicate a pop concert inside a musical. So it was very clear from the beginning that there needed to be synchronization between lighting and music, and, you know, beats and changes of color in the music also, you know, imply a change of color in the lighting and all that kind of thing. So there is definitely there was a strong link. So I effectively sent Tim kind of tracks of the music. I mean, these are going back, you know, 2.5 years now, the kind of very first versions I did. And it's, again, it's been an evolution from there. So, you know, he effectively created the lighting to go along to the music tracks. It's all click tracked and, you know, time coded, so everything can be absolutely in sync. So yeah, and it's fun because, you know, we keep adding new things, and you know, for the Broadway production, there's some new music and stuff in there. So there were new moments of lighting that had to be, you know, programmed in and recorded, and I love it when the music and the lighting can sync in a way that is kind of satisfying, and, you know, what you're hearing is also what you're seeing. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, and that's what captured me the first time, because, like, I went into the show obviously knowing the music pretty much off by heart, and then sitting there and watching, kind of the first thing that got me was the, like, his No Way kind of lights that kind of build as it goes, and I'm like,
yeah, it's,
oh,
so good,
damn,
so,
like, good. Okay, all right, we're going here, all right.
So
obviously this is a very young creative team, which is very rare in big productions, but most productions as well. So what's it like being in the room with these young, hungry creatives that are kind of just striving to be the top of their selective creative channel, and just kind of pushing and feeding off each other to make this experience the best possible thing it could be?
Yeah, it's amazing actually to have such a young creative team. There is something really special about that actually, and I feel like the energy might be different as well because of it. I don't know, there's we're all young, we're all, you know, it's just weird to see a show that is, you know, that's had such a success, you know, but yet the people behind it are all so young. It's just a weird thing, but it's amazing to be a part of that for sure. I don't know what else to say really.
That leads perfectly into my next question. Talk me through the moment of getting the notification about the Olivier noms, and what that was like, knowing, oh, okay, yep, okay, we're actually, this is official now. We're actually pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I remember I was at home and I was doing something completely unwork related, or maybe watching TV or something. And my agent texted me and was like, oh my God, like, you know, congratulations, amazing. And then I'm like, what's he going about? I didn't even know it was like Olivier, nominations announcement or whatever. But then, yeah, sure enough, I see that the show has been nominated for multiple things, and it is that kind of thing, you just go, okay, actually, you know, even to be considered, even for the show to be considered in the same kind of, on the same level as some of these other massive players, was a real shock to me actually. And, you know, for the rest of the day I had people on the phone, you know, ringing and being like, oh my God, I can't believe it. And then I think, yeah, the atmosphere in the theatre that night must have been, you know, electric, because, you know, they'd all been nominated for for Olivier Awards. Bizarre.
So did you have a hand in, because obviously I don't think the, before the Olivier's, the kind of ex-wives six mashup hadn't really been put anywhere. Were you kind of a part in figuring out how to take the two songs and smacking my microphone there and putting them together?
Yeah, so that was an assignment for, I think, first of all, for that award ceremony was to push those two together. So yeah, that involved well, first of all, working out how to do it, and then I think there's four bars of like linking material that had to be created. So yeah, I had to do a kind of a demo of that, and then obviously the usual approvals, and you know, and then yeah, for that award ceremony, we had our onstage band, and then we also had the orchestra, the Olivier Awards orchestra. So it was a step of then, okay, going, okay, well, that's the routine that everyone's happy with, and you know, Carrie Anne and all the creatives are happy with that. And then I then blew it up kind of one step, kind of, you know, taking our album material and you know, orchestrating that version of for our album instrumentation, and then it was taken another step up for the orchestra. So yeah, it was kind of a multi-layered thing. Really fun. And that is funny, that version is now being used in multiple other places.
It's kind of like the official promo kind of thing now.
That's right. There's a kind of a definitive list now of promotional cuts of songs, and that is the Olivier Awards edit, or whatever you call it.
I love that. So with working on this show so in depth and knowing things kind of inside and out, what is your favorite part of the show musically?
Oh my gosh.
Now we put him on the spot, guys.
there's so many parts that I love. I just think the writing in general, I have to say, is amazing. And you know, I kind of feel like Toby Lucy, they don't know how clever and good it actually is. It's almost like they're so humble about it, and so not naive to it, but it is like, you know, you have created something that is, you know, exceptional. I have many musical favorite moments, many geeky musical moments that probably people won't even pick up when they listen to it. But there's lots of little satisfying things for me in there. I have to say my favorite moment on stage, when everything has kind of come together, one of my favorite moments is the at the end of the show, when the girls are standing in their kind of six positions with the spotlight straight down, and they're singing "It's the End of the Show," it's a remix, and it kind of everything quietens down for that kind of 20-30 seconds of music. I don't know why, but that is my favorite. There's something so, it's the simplicity of just having them stand with these spotlights straight down on them, and the back wall of the roster is kind of like twinkling away, and yeah, I just love that moment of the music and how that you know, is reflected in all the other design elements. I think it's cool. But there's lots of little geeky, I mean, I could talk for hours about.
Let's go into the geeky stuff, because I now listen and hear it, and so talk me through it. Go on.
Oh my gosh.
That's what we're here for. We're here to kind of get everybody's brains flowing into how amazing things like this can be.
Yeah, I think one of the briefs was that they were very keen to keep the kind of Tudor references flowing throughout, not only in the music, but also in all the other design areas of costume and the set design, even that lattice behind the wall, you know, there's Tudor references all over the place. And the music, especially so, that, you know, a lot of these sounds that kind of Toby, Lucy and I just sat in a room and kind of came up with these synth sounds and, you know, finding the right noise for the right moment and the right whoosh and all this kind of thing. And, you know, if you go back and listen, there's a lot of these synth sounds that are kind of, it's a synth, but it's also got harpsichord inside it as well.
And so
it
kind of, I've noticed that there's like several different ones as well, where it like at first listen, it sounds like a synth, but then you listen and it's like, oh, actually that's like, it's almost layered and it's, yeah.
There's a lot of that. And that was something that we were all really keen to kind of make that a thing, so that it's not just, you know, there's a clear, you know, I mean, it's really crude, but kind of Tudor music reference, like recorders and harpsichords and lutes and yeah, it's just splatter all over the place. And even that Greensleeves melody that the whole of the opening number is kind of made up on.
Yeah.
You know, I tried to find a way to incorporate the that musical figure into other places where, you know, when you're listening, you probably won't even know. I mean, my favorite hidden Greensleeves, the second part of Greensleeves that goes da 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 da, the end, I mean, this is going completely into the massive detail, but the end of Anne Boleyn's opening section in the opening number, there's a little kind of glockenspiel thing that goes dun dun da da dun da da dun, which is da 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 da. It's that phrase of Greensleeves, but the rhythm is slightly altered and no one would ever know, but it's kind of satisfying that there is like the second part of Greensleeves is actually in there. It's things like that.
Man, the techie in me wants to kind of sit down and just look at kind of like the Pro Tools, kind of just see how many tracks and how many different little notes and this has just blown me away. I'm like, this is great. I don't even know where to go next. Let's go here. Let's see if this brings any other things up. Say we get another massive sickness sweep through and it gets to the point where you're the only one in the area that knows the content and they need you to go on to cover somebody. What Queen are you choosing to go on for?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I think I have to be Jane Seymour, just because I feel like, yeah, I'm happy to stand and sing a ballad and, you know, keep out of the way and everything else. But yeah, I think I'd have to be probably a Seymour. But yeah, not that I would ever volunteer my acting, singing or dancing skills.
So you've mentioned the kind of writing. Lyrically, what is your favorite kind of section of the show that every time you hear, you're like, how did you even come up with that? Like, where?
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of moments that I'm just like, oh, it's just so damn clever. The whole like pheasant thing, I think, is just amazing. Like the bring me some pheasant,
yeah,
all that. There's so much kind of wordplay in like two meanings for the same word, like history is about to get overthrown. It's overthrown, but it's also thrown as in sitting on a throne. I mean, it's things like that. It's just so clever. I mean, the lyrics throughout, I think, are amazing. I could, yeah, name numerous examples. I think, you know, Don't Lose Your Head, another example of just like hilarious and funny, you know, lyrics. And yeah, it's just all very, it's just very current and very now. And I think that's why it's resonated again, because, you know, it's teaching, or it's history, but in a way that has, you know, through those lyrics, has become so relatable and accessible and fun. And I think that is another kind of secret to its, you know, success in inverted commas. It's the lyrics are just captured so many people's imaginations and going, oh, that's so clever. And yeah.
Yeah. Is there something you've learnt through the show that you maybe didn't know historically?
Definitely, yeah. I think I'm one of those people. I kind of knew the wives of Henry VIII, and I knew I knew the order of the rhyme, but I guess that's as far as you go with it. And yeah, I didn't know the backstories, and I didn't know about Hans Holbein. I think that whole segment of the show is just so clever, and the lyrics in that one are very, very good as well. I mean, they're all amazing. But yeah, learning about that, and that Cleves effectively won history by her settlement and agreement, and yeah, it is amazing how you just don't know about these characters in any kind of detail, really. Certainly learning history in school in the UK, you just learn, he had six wives and da da da, and that's really about it. I mean, I think I knew that Anne Boleyn had six fingers or something. I don't know, but yeah.
That's something I didn't know when I was like, I heard that and I was like, oh, I'm going to have to Google that later. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. Oh, come on. I had it. Where was it? No, we're gone. Guys, that was a good question too, I promise.
Come back.
Overall, what is your favorite thing about this show?
I think it's the fact that it has captured an audience's imagination in a way that I haven't really seen with other shows. I think there's something, I mean, even just being in that first preview on Broadway was the most incredible experience in a theatre I think I've ever had. There was just something it was the anticipation for a show that had kind of whipped up a fandom, through its kind of mini journey through America, but before it kind of found itself in New York. But there was just such a hype, and I was just sitting there going, I just can't believe this is, that all these people have come to see this show, which started out, let's face it, in a conference center in Edinburgh, in a student production. There's just something, I think just seeing that journey of the show and seeing the audience come along for the ride, I think it's just, yeah, it's amazing. And I have to say that first Broadway preview was very, very special indeed.
Yeah. Did you go to BroadwayCon at all? Were you a part
of it? No, I flew out the week, or just the week after, because that was that a weekend, like Friday to Sunday or something?
Yeah, it was a Friday to Sunday. I think it was the week you guys started rehearsals. I want to say it was the weekend before rehearsals started.
I think I flew out the end of that week.
So I think you flew in the day or two after I flew out, because I was there. So like that was the perfect kind of example of the hype. Like, just.
Did you go to the, did they do a sing along?
Yeah. That's where I was going. Have you ever been in the venue for a sing-along?
No, I've never been in the theatre when I'm going to sing along. I think I'd be like this most of the time. I think these are my ears, it was loud. But yeah, I think that's also cool. The fact that, the show has found a way to present itself as a sing-along production. I think there's a few others that, I think Heathers maybe have tried to do that, or have on tour, I think they might have done, I'm not sure, but yeah, it's not a common thing to open up a show and be like, hey, come along and sing along.
Yeah.
I think the music lends itself to that perfectly to start with. I think the fact that people know all the words and are so up for singing along. But yeah, I heard about BroadwayCon, and I heard one of those amazing experiences of
it baffled me. Like, obviously I'd seen kind of things from the UK, but to be in the room, and I was like right at the front of the group too, so everyone was like shouting it, and I was like, it's weird to think how much this show means to people, considering it's like a historical kind of retelling. It's got those life lessons and stories throughout that people are learning from and are really connecting to, which another testament to you all for creating something that is so, what's the word? Inviting, I think. Like it's a.
I think it's the message, the kind of the message this show sends out and beams out all over the place. I think is so important and so vital and strong and powerful and kind of, you know, we will not be defined by men and just the whole kind of feminist aspect and you know, reclaiming stories that have, you know, forever being told by, you know, a man's perspective. I think there's just something so powerful about that. And it's so relatable now, probably more than ever. I think another reason why people have kind of, you know, really come on board with it is just the strong message and the positivity and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It is, and actually to see the show in all different places as well is very, you know, it's very eye-opening and, yeah, to see people connect in such a cool way.
Yeah, awesome. Now, you aren't just a six guy. You do have ventured outwards of the Queen. So let's touch on a couple of other things because you worked with Toby on Hot Gay Time Machine as well. Then West End Bear, Sound of Music. What's it like learning from a show like Six and then going to other projects? Like how much have you developed as a creative through this process to venture out into other projects and beyond?
Yeah, I think this project was certainly on the edge of my comfort zone. And I think that is why I found it so rewarding to begin with, but also it was just such an enjoyable creative experience because, you know, songs like Get Down are far out of my comfort zone in terms of being able to work with that kind of style or musical material. So I think to have a show that explores kind of the pop sound, but from kind of, well, nine different angles, if you want to compartmentalize all the songs into different styles. Yeah, it certainly was the most exciting thing I'd ever worked on in terms of, you know, being a part of a creative team and music and all that kind of thing. But yeah, I've learned a huge amount. A lot of what I did on Six was also kind of music production. So I don't normally do a lot of that in other, you know, legitimate or traditional musicals where it's kind of, you know, orchestral instruments or whatever. So the kind of pop production it really opened my eyes to what's possible and just how to create sounds, you know, how to, that process of extracting the sound of one song and kind of finding a way to put that onto Toby and Lucy's music. Was thrilling and something I'd never had to do before. It's also very different working with composers who are living, I have to say. Like,
you're doing getting really that well. Instant feedback of, hi, we want this.
Yeah, but also because it's such a two-way thing and you know, it's open to, you know, interpretation and all that kind of thing. Whereas, you know, if you're working on a revival where the composers are dead or whatever, then it's almost, there's a certain way that stuff has to be. I love working on new writing and I think it's just so exciting and there's a lot going on. I think it's just you know, only once in a while do things really I think when the stars align in a way that allow projects like Six to really take off that we see that kind of thing. But there, yeah, new writing for sure is always really exciting.
Amazing. Now for people that are listening, that maybe you're on the more creative side of theatre, maybe you don't want to be a performer or anything like that. Obviously, this is a very viable route to take. Do you have any advice for people that maybe want to get into orchestrating, arranging, and going down that side of theatre?
Yeah. I guess I started off effectively, I was always interested in theatre, always interested in, you know, singers and singing. I was in a choir, all this kind of thing. So I think I always had that interest and I moved to London to study and just got involved in all kinds of kind of extracurricular things, whether it was playing for cabarets or, you know, doing gigs with a band and some singers, you know, just trying to throw myself into the kind of London music scene, or to be honest, wherever you happen to be or studying. I think it's just the advice I give is that if you're going to university to study, not even to study music, but just to study, then find those extra curricular activities, the kind of all those opportunities which I'm sure are out there. You just have to go finding them. And I just did a lot of playing for cabarets and just slowly kind of you know, a lot of fringe theatre as well. I did a lot of, when I was just kind of starting out, a lot of London fringe theatre. I think the best way to do the best way to do arranging is to do arranging. Like, you know, anyone wrong, if they've got any interest in you know, wanting to do more, I think is, you know, to take a song and to add instruments, or to, you know, to just do your own arrangement of it, you know, whether it's for your own personal, you know, just for fun or for a gig or whatever it is. I think there's always a way to get into it somehow.
Amazing. Well, Tom, that brings us to the end. Thank you for coming and hanging out. It's been fantastic chatting this side of the show, and I've learned so much, and it's been really, really cool. So Queens, I hope you guys have learned a ton too, and you're going to go and listen to the recording just like I am right now, and hear everything that Tom's just spoken about. If you don't already, please go follow Tom. His links will be down below. Show him some love, because he is an amazing human being and a very smart, intelligent human being, if you can't tell by what he was just talking about, because damn. Other than that, we will be back next week with a brand new episode of the podcast. So we hope you join us, and we will see you then.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.